And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is ideas you may not have considered. Each of my guests is giving us new information with which to view today's top news stories. My next guest is CNBC's editor from the floor of the Chicago Board of Trade. His no-nonsense style of reporting on the bond market and currency markets make him a favorite among investors concerned about the growing size and scope of government involvement in the financial markets. We'll discuss the end of quantitative easing too and the future of the bond and currency markets. And if you have a question or if you want to call in and talk to Rick Santelli, you can always call us at 639-0008. Rick Santelli joined CNBC Business News as the on-air editor way back in June of 1999, reporting live from the floor of the Chicago Board of Trade. His focus is primarily on interest rates, foreign exchange, and the Federal Reserve. Rick is a veteran trader and financial executive. Prior to joining CNBC, Rick worked for Suwannee Futures, the Rand Financial Services, Gelderman, Inc., and Drexel Burnham Lambert. He is a graduate of the University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana with a Bachelor's of Science degree, and Rick has been a member of both the Chicago Mercantile Exchange and the Chicago Board of Trade. Joining us from Chicago. Hi, Rick. How are you doing today?
Well, thanks for having me, Bill.
Oh, it's our pleasure and love to have you because you are truly a thought leader in the scope of business. So let's dive right into it because you may not have had a chance to see it, but reported in today's Los Angeles Times, there's a big old headline in the business section that says, Treasury likely to see a profit on the investment. And it says, goes on to say that the Treasury has recovered 65% of the $225 billion that it spent to buy mortgage-backed securities. Now, proponents of the stimulus plan that was meant to stabilize housing said that this is proof, positive, that the stimulus plan worked. It didn't cost us, the taxpayers, anything, and in fact, it made money. True or false, Rick? Is that a true statement for the newspaper to be saying?
In my opinion, it's false, and I'll tell you why quite simply. If you borrowed $1 million from your friends and your annual income was $100,000, you took the whole million and you went to the racetrack and pretty much happened to make about $25 total. So you go back to your friend, you say, listen, here's all the money back. I made a profit of $25. And they asked you what you did with the money. Do you think they would have thought that just because you made $25 that the money was used in a prudent fashion? See, the key here is that the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve, Bill, is close to $3 trillion. So in order to make it look like there's a profit in the price of these securities, they basically had to buy up all the securities. Okay?
Okay.
And it doesn't also establish, you know, I have daughters that are trying to make it on their own in these tough times, but I co-sign for an apartment. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that co-signing, you know, they need my permission for that. Basically, the taxpayer co-signed on some of these loans or this amount of money. Where did it come from the taxpayers? Well, actually, it comes from future earnings of the taxpayers because it's debt. The issue isn't whether you can show it deemed a profit or not, but you really have to put all your true expenses and how much money's at risk. The notion that really bugs many, including myself, is that it isn't the government's role to leverage an industry that should have probably gone under versus gotten bailed out. And I'm talking Wall Street and banks, basically everybody. I don't think bailouts should fly. You know, if you take the religion of going bankrupt out of capitalism, what are you left with?
Really nothing, because there's no downside risk to the whole thing. So that is okay. That's an important credo in capitalism, Rick. My guest is Rick Santelli. Well, Rick, then talk to me a little bit about this. So we did have some of the companies go out of business. We had Lehman Brothers go out of business. AIG effectively is now owned by the government. So how would this have played out if, in fact, we had allowed the corporations, the big banks that we deemed too big to fail, if they had failed, what would our economic landscape look like? It would certainly be different than it is today.
Well, there's a number of ways, and we'll never know, but here's my assessment. What's the average person, Bill, really worried about when it comes to banks? I mean, let's get right down to the nitty-gritty. People that talk to you and call in on your show, if a bank is going to go down, what's the first question that caller is going to ask?
The security of their money. Is my money safe? How can I get it back?
Bingo. So in my opinion, sure, there's room for the government during crisis times. I think that the backstopping of funds from a guaranteed standpoint, which they did, they could have done it maybe even to a higher tune if they didn't bail out these institutions. And I do think there is something to be said that maybe times would have gotten a little dicier than they did. But my opinion is that they would have turned to an upswing much quicker. You know, instead of ripping the Band-Aid off, taking the pain we're going to take, it's going to either be spread out over 20 years, or in my opinion, if we would have just kind of let these things roll and been more of a conductor to make sure nothing got out of whack, guarantee what people are most worried about, it might have gotten darker, but I think 3 years into this, we would have been much healthier than we are now. This recovery, talk to anybody in construction, talk to anybody who's trying to refinance their house, who is still gainfully employed, and yet they can't because the collateral, the value of their house is much lower, and a banking industry that was bailed out is reticent to take on that collateral damage that in many ways has not been fostered by all the money that's spent not only on the programs you just asked about, but home modification and all these other programs that really just kind of, you know, let's go to the lake and try to dump good money after bad.
My guest is Rick Santella. You're using the old Band-Aid analogy. I like that. You mentioned in your one of your earlier answers about your daughters, and you've got daughters growing up. I've got children and grandchildren. Now, what is the future risk to us as taxpayers and to our children and our grandchildren on the path that we're currently on?
Oh, it lowers standard of living. I mean, it's just so obvious. Political leaders are more worried about getting elected than they are about the fate of our grandchildren. I'm sorry, but that's the way I see it. You know, just look at some of the issues today. The big talk now with the debt ceiling is we need to take away these privileged tax loopholes. How many times have you heard that, Bill?
Far too often.
Okay, well, I don't know about listeners in general, but my interpretation is those loopholes they're talking about, the proper name for that is called the tax code, and they made it. Aliens didn't come from Mars or Venus and supplant the Congress and sneak these things in. Every one of those quote-unquote loopholes is part of the tax code, probably bought and paid for by a lobby group. Let's be frank here. It's their rules, and they talk Congress. I'm talking all parties, okay? Left, center, and right. They talk as though that they've never had their fingerprints on this. It blows my mind.
Well, the tax code is a disturbing thing, Rick, and I would agree with you on that. Unfortunately, the tax code is like trying to design a horse by committee. You end up getting a camel, and that's what has happened since 1913 when income taxes were first introduced to today. There have been so many modifications and so many things. It is just a monstrosity. So let me ask.
Why don't we put more Band-Aids on it? Why don't, you know, I always hear the comments, Bill, from congressmen and senators, anybody on Capitol Hill. Well, you know, whether it's Fannie, it's too tough to tackle, too big now. Tax code, too monstrous to tackle. There are many very small emerging countries that came to those crossroads and decided, hey, a simplified flat tax, it's obvious, it's transparent, and it's deemed to be fair, and it usually brings in boatloads of revenue that were unanticipated. You know, why don't they roll up their sleeves and get to work? We see what needs to be done. Excuses, denial, I call it the ostrich effect, and I think Americans are tired of it.
Well, I can say that, Rick, but you look at Latvia or Lithuania, who have instituted the flat tax, and it has been a booming success for them. But let's face it, their economy is a fraction of the size of
them. Why does that matter? Why does it matter? Why shouldn't corporations have a two-tier system? Why should the Americans not have a similar system? Maybe even go completely to a consumption or a VAT tax, but don't add it on to the current tax system, because we're already turning into Europe, and I don't know that that's the road we should go down. It seems as though in D.C., you know, think about alternative minimum tax, just to pull something out of the air.
Ooh, yeah.
You know, how many programs have ever been designed by our government that doesn't take into account the rising costs and inflation? Every program, cost of living increases, they get how that works. Now, why is it that the only program that doesn't seem to have had an inflation adjustment was the alternative minimum tax?
And that's coming around to bite many of my listeners this
Absolutely.
Year, Rick. It's an ugly situation developing there, that is for sure. My guest is Rick Santelli of CNBC. He reports on the bond markets from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Rick, I'm going to change gears, talk a little bit about foreign exchange, because there's some news in this area as well. Foreign exchange is an indicator of a country's financial health. Now, the U.S. dollar has been a little bit stronger in recent weeks, probably because the euro has been weaker. If you look at the dollar index, however, it's weaker over the past 2 years. So what does a weak dollar signal for the United States?
You know, I'm a simple guy, Bill. I look at the stock stock in a country is represented by the value of its currency. And there's always going to be those who say, ah, weaker currency, it's great for exports. That's code for saying, you know, our country has been ransacked, and now the overseas customers have more money in their pocket. It's easier to sell to them. Don't buy into that. As far as the dollar index, you know, 2 years ago it was around 80, 81.
Right.
It's currently around just a smidge under 75. If you go back to 02, it was at 120. But we're only looking at a sliver of the picture. Dollar index is 54% influenced by the value of the euro currency. And the reason that I say that that's a distortion is because we are, you know, comparing which shirt is cleanest in the dirty clothes pile. And we're benchmarking ourselves to an organization of countries where they have Greece, Portugal, Spain, technically insolvent, even though they won't admit it in public. If you were to look at gold prices over $1,500, if you were to look at currencies like the Swiss franc or the Aussie dollar, or the Canadian dollar, New Zealand dollar, you would see that the real value of the U.S. greenback pretty much has always gone in one direction. Year after year, it's just lower, lower, lower. And most Americans have no idea that they're transferring their purchasing power offshore.
Well, it's interesting. Rick, you probably don't know it, but you're broadcasting into Ventura County, which is the home of the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library. And one of the first things.
I knew that.
All right. You're the man. The first thing that Ronald Reagan did when he came into power was to strengthen the U.S. dollar. That was one of his four tenets that he built his economic platform on. When will we see the United States come back to that realization that we need to strengthen the U.S. dollar?
I wish I could answer that. The U.S. dollar is the abandoned child. It's the orphan in the attic with no babysitter. It has no caretaker. The Treasury is supposed to speak for the dollar. The Fed is reticent to ever speak about the dollar. And the Treasury secretaries, past and present, really seem to have, you know, answers like, oh, we believe in a strong dollar policy. Well, you ask what that strong dollar policy is? It's the statement of saying you have a strong dollar policy. I don't know. In my opinion, the dollar is the collateral damage that's inherent in the strategy of inflating and printing one's way towards prosperity. You know, look at the Federal Reserve. They talk about tools in their toolbox. Look at the ECB, the European Central Bank, the MPC, the Monetary Policy Committee in the UK. They only have one tool. Look at everything post-1913 when our central bank was created. Their tool is to liquefy. And the boogeyman, if the only tool you have is to print more money, your boogeyman has to be deflation, because deflation then becomes your go-go catchphrase to print even more money. I don't believe there's ever been any deflation in this country. I think there's been deleveraging, and my analogy is this. Okay. If a house 4 years ago in your part of the woods sold for $1 million and today it's at $600,000, I don't think that's deflationary, because if it's deflationary, according to the Fed's own rule book, their goal is to put the price back at $1 million. And to me, the problem with what we came through is those prices weren't real. Real is $600,000, and it might be even more real when it gets to $500,000. Trying to put back Humpty Dumpty isn't possible. Humpty Dumpty broke for a reason, and the reason was is that risk and easy money distorted prices in many sectors, and we're on our road to doing it again.
Well, my guest is Rick Santelli, and Rick, this is not a secret. Ben Bernanke and Timothy Geithner both are saying that we are pursuing this fiscal policy of keeping interest rates artificially low, and they know the impact that it's having on the dollar. Now, the rationalization is what you mentioned earlier, that it makes our exports better. It makes it easier for Swiss Air to buy our jets China to buy our Caterpillar tractors and so forth. But in reality, this is not a secret. This is a well-known, publicized thing. How do we get the attention of our legislatures to say this isn't the way that we want to go?
Midterms and general elections. That's the way, and I think the last midterm is going to look like child's play to November 2012 if we continue to see these half-hearted excuses. And I'll give you another one.
Okay.
Corporate taxes, 35% in this country, right?
Highest in the world.
Yeah, I don't buy a word of that, because, see, there's another solution that's an artificial one. The conventional wisdom in the political circles is, let's lower that, we'll broaden the base, and we're going to bring in just all this extra revenue in a painless sort of way. You know, today we had Warren Buffett on.
Mm-hmm.
We had the head of Coke on. They were asked point blank what their corporations pay. Nowhere near 35%. Coke is about 24%. I think Warren Buffett was in the high teens. GE paid nothing. And it's not like any of them are breaking rules. Once again, these are the rules politicians made. To think that there's this panacea of money out there, nobody pays 35%. I should not say nobody. Many major corporations pay far less.
True, but it's unfortunate the mid-size and small businesses that are here in Ventura
right.
and Santa Barbara County.
The most important ones, actually.
Right, and we're the ones that get stuck with that. My guest is Rick Santelli. Rick, we're running out of time, but before we go, I do want to look at the global financial picture with you, if we can, because I'm seeing some emerging trends. Greece just last week voted to accept austerity measures. Great Britain, under Prime Minister David Cameron, has voted in austerity measures themselves. Is this beginning of a worldwide trend towards less government spending and more austerity, in your opinion?
It would appear so, but legislating and voting is one thing. Delivering the goods is another. Every semester, my kids promise and sign a little affidavit in my household that they're going to strive for straight A's. You know, the notion here is quite simple. We've been around the block with Greece several times on this, and austerity is very difficult. And in our country, listeners, just keep this in mind. At the current pace we're on, we have much more say-so in how we cure what ails our economy in terms of fiscal discipline. The longer we wait, the more it's going to be forced upon us, like it is currently being done in Greece, Portugal, soon to be Spain, maybe Italy.
And well said, well said. My guest has been Rick Santelli of CNBC. It has been a delight, Rick, having you on the show. If people want to learn more about you, learn more about your writings, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
You know, I'm pretty much a one-horse show. They just need to tune in to CNBC. I'm on about every half hour, and after 2 days, they'll pretty much get what I'm all about.
Yeah, that is true. I've been watching you since 1999, and it's been a delight. Rick, thank you so much for being my special guest. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks. I would love to come back sometime.
Thanks, Rick. We'll have you back, no doubt about that.